This meeting is now being recorded.
Thank you, Alan. This is Brenda speaking for the record, and I'd like to welcome you all to the RDS Who Is To Review Team Plenary Call Number 22 on March 5th, 2018 at 1430 UTC. In attendance today, we have Dimitri, Alan, Susan, Lily, Erica, Carlton, Catherine. From ICANN organization, we have Alice, Brenda, Amy, Steve, Lisa, and Jean-Baptiste. We have apologies from Volker, Chris, and Thomas. And at this time, there are no observers. Today's call is being recorded. May I please remind you to state your name before speaking for the transcript, and I'll turn the meeting over to you, Alan. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there any additions to the agenda or any other business? It is a longer agenda than we're likely to finish today, but we're optimistic, and we wanted to make sure we could cover if any of the people were not, in fact, here. And seeing no hands, I will presume the agenda is accepted as displayed, and we'll go on to the first item. My mouth is not in gear yet. Any statement of interest? Updates. Seeing nothing, we'll go on to the first item on the agenda, and that is outreach, and I presume I'm turning this over to Jean-Baptiste.
Thank you, Alan. So on the blog post, really quickly, I will provide you with an update. So there were no comments received from the review team on the blog post last week. And so the blog post has been published on February 27 on ICANN.org, so you have the link in the slide deck. So right now we'll encourage you to spread the word and share this blog post around you, and on our site we will be drafting a note for the leadership that will go out to the SONAC leadership to inform them about this and about the review team next steps. Any questions on that? Oh, and also Alice has placed the blog post link into the chat so that it's clickable for you.
Thank you. I hear nothing. I see nothing. We'll assume that is all in order. And we'll go on to the next item, which is the major item in our agenda today, and that is subgroup update status.
Alan,
did you have something to
talk?
Oh, sorry, I see Lisa's
yes,
hand is up, and Jean-Baptiste,
exactly.
If you want to speak, please both go ahead in that order.
That was for Lisa.
Oh, okay, then Lisa, go ahead.
Yeah.
Lisa? I am not hearing Lisa. I see your phone says you're speaking, but I'm not hearing any voice. And Lisa will dial back in. We'll give her a moment. Lisa wanted to suggest a stakeholder that review team members do outreach to their own stakeholder groups about the blog post. I think Jean-Baptiste already suggested that, and we will be sending a message out to the leadership in each of those groups in any case. But yes. So let us go on to the first substantive item, and that is the subgroup update status. And the first one on our list is Catherine. Is Catherine on the bridge yet or in a position to speak?
No, I'm on the phone, so if I may, I will provide the update orally.
That is fine.
Excellent. So I'm just making my way up to the home office. Sorry. Here I'm out of breath. It's because our house is very tall and very narrow. So, to be quite short, I'm updating you on the strategic priority subgroup, which, and that's entirely my fault, has not yet been very active. So while we did formulate a series of detailed briefing questions back in the first task document, we're going to have the first discussion of them tomorrow with the subgroup members. And on that basis, we hope to proceed with the briefing request to ICANN to basically get to the bottom of a couple of factual questions, such as in what way, shape, or form the strategic priority that is supposedly given to who is evidenced in things such as compensation agreements or just strategic prioritization within ICANN as an organization, where we're going to ask for a bit more details on how exactly that is detected. And on the basis of tomorrow's call, we hope to then also determine the best format for this. I have tentatively suggested that we do that through a written request, so a request for written input that could then be followed up by a conversation, also building on Susan's very positive experience from the compliance subgroup, where they were able to use Susan's presence in Los Angeles to actually have a face-to-face meeting with the compliance team to go through a couple of the questions, and we might wish to reproduce that through a remote meeting. And I've also sent a draft of the planning questions to the subgroup, and have not yet received any comments, so I think those are pretty much ready to share with the group, but I will wait for the endorsement of the subgroup tomorrow and then share them with the group as a whole. And that's my brief update for now. I'm available, of course, for any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Why don't we take this break to see if Lisa can actually speak?
Thank you, Alan. Can you hear me now?
We can perfectly.
Thanks.
The trials and tribulations of Adobe Connect. Is there anyone with any questions for Susan? For Catherine, rather, sorry. And there are no hands. Then we will go on to the next item. Thank you. And I look forward to that meeting, even though it's at a semi-unreasonable time tomorrow for me. And we now have Catherine on Adobe Connect. And the next item...
Yes, I'm sorry about the unreasonable time.
It's quite a reasonable time for you. All right. Next item on our agenda is privacy proxy, if we have someone who is in a position to speak to it. And Susan, that would probably be you, if indeed you are going to speak to it, or are we going to defer this one?
Hi, this is Susan. I really wasn't prepared, but I did see your email, and I thought maybe if we don't have anybody else prepared to speak to it, that maybe we could discuss that a little bit. I need
sure.
to pull that up. But you felt like most of the questions weren't relevant, so I was just wanting to...
Well, a lot... That. Yeah, let me go back and get the questions. Hold on. Let me see if I can pull that up quickly. I'm not sure I can. Sorry, just give me a moment.
So we did start to develop questions for ICANN staff and for the just as a general report for the probably Jen Gore and Caitlin Kubrick, or is it back to? Trying to think of who runs it. Is it Amy now? So anyway, ICANN staff. So we're developing, the subteam is developing questions, and Alan had some input. That's just as safe for everybody else.
Yeah, there were a lot of questions posed by, I think, mainly by Volker, and they're all relevant to the implementation or to the privacy proxy issue, but I'm not sure what the nexus point, the intersection is with who is specifically. Now, the only reason we have privacy proxy services is to protect who is information. So there is clearly a connection to who is. But as an example, are any parts of the implementation will require new technology? Will internal systems be used? What internal systems will be used? Looking at some of the other ones, what are the challenges to implementation? Those are all really associated with the privacy proxy implementation, but I'm not sure what the connection is to who is, although conceivably some of the answers might reference who is, but there doesn't seem to be any apparent connection that we can make right now, and therefore that's why I'm asking, are these really who is questions, or are they an in-depth review of the privacy proxy implementation, which of course in terms of the work it has to do of you know, having as contracted parties privacy proxy servers and the contracts and all sorts of procedures associated with that, I'm not sure what the real connection is to who is itself. Now, maybe I'm missing some point here.
No, that's an interesting perspective. In some ways I was thinking, because I drafted some of those questions, probably all of the ones you mentioned, I was thinking that because the first Who Is review team, outlined in quite a bit of detail for what the privacy proxy service or privacy proxy policy should be, that, actually, and we're at the point of implementation or getting close, that it was critical to know, if this worked or not. So that's why those questions went to, technologies and, budget and all those kind of things. So I'll take another look at that and talk to Volker and the rest of the group and see if we might remove some of those.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if it, again, I'm not sure of if that's really relevant, but if it is, I would assume that could be covered with a global question saying, at this point, do you see any impediments to implementing the policy? As opposed to going into some depth as to all of the potential issues that could arise or the, sort of almost looking ahead or saying what might the answers be?
Yeah. No, that's a good point. Okay, I'll note that.
Any other comments on this one?
Hi, this is Catherine, sorry.
Go ahead, Catherine.
This was just to say that one thing we also discussed was whether there could be some cross-fertilization with the law enforcement needs subgroup. In the sense that we might want to integrate a question or two in a possible survey to be done for the law enforcement needs one on how law enforcement works with privacy proxy and whether there are specific issues. And that might also be true for other user groups, but of course that's one that I'm particularly aware of. One thought that actually spurred that was, I think, Lisa's reaction to Volker's suggestion that we might check with the, with ICANN how many complaints they had gotten on the privacy proxy services thus far, which I think it was Lisa guessed that there would probably have been none so far. So we clearly need to find some other way of identifying issues if there are any.
Yeah. I would assume with law enforcement, you would have to ask, have there been any problems with the current less formal implementation of privacy proxy servers? And do you foresee any change And if so, what changes with the more formal version? Because clearly it's being completely unregulated, and there are no rules right now as to other than the rules of law in the jurisdiction where they live, as to how the information might be unveiled by privacy proxy services. Whereas in the new implementation, perhaps there's something more detailed, although I'm not sure there is. All right, any further comments on privacy proxy? The next item, which also we do not have anyone on the call with regard to, is the common interface. That was also Volker's, and we have Susan's hand up on that. Please go ahead.
It looks like Volker has joined, so we should ask him about privacy.
Ooh, we do have Volker, despite apologies. Volker, welcome.
Well, the meeting ended early, so I'm woefully unprepared, but I thought I'd join anyway just to make sure that...
We just had a recap on privacy proxy. Were you on the call at that point?
I just joined, literally okay. 5 seconds ago.
All right. Susan raised the issue on privacy proxy of my email, which had asked to what extent are all of those questions really directly related to who is as opposed to related to the privacy proxy actual implementation. And her answer, if I can try to summarize it very quickly, was really that if there are any difficulties and there's a lot of work that has to be done to implement the privacy proxy policy. If there are impediments to that, then that will ultimately have an effect on who is. And I suggested that maybe asking a simpler question, not foreseeing what the answers are, but simply saying, do you staff foresee any potential impediments to implementing the policy as written? And that's sort of where we stopped in that discussion. I don't know if you have any insight or want to add anything to it at this point, but I'll give you a chance and then go on to the next item if not.
It's a good question, but I do think that there is a direct connection between privacy proxy providers and Whois, so delving into that may be worth a while. Even though we decided that we can have these providers, that does not impact, the requirements of data quality that these providers have to meet. And even though this data is not in the public Whois forum, it's still, we still call it, at least internally, we still call it Whois data, even though it's not public. It's just hidden Whois data.
That is certainly true, but I'm not sure how the implementation team are going to comment on that. It's an interesting question of how do you ensure quality when you can't see the data.
True enough.
I'm not an expert on that policy. I paid relatively little attention to the PDP as it was going on. I'm assuming that whatever responsibilities are on registrars to validate data or validate these formats and any of the accuracy requirements there are also in turn put on the privacy proxy providers. Is that not the case?
Unless I'm very much mistaken, that is the case. It's just a bit harder to verify that.
No, it's impossible to verify.
Well, it may come into effect once a privacy proxy provider decides to no longer provide services for a certain domain or in other cases where they would be required to reveal the underlying data, for example, to inquiring who is police, law enforcement interests that have the right to access that data. And if it's then found that this data is of substandard quality, so let me say, then that would probably give rise to the opportunity to make a complaint to ICANN compliance and tell them that the provider did not do their job right. So that that would be a case where that works.
Indeed. Any further comments on privacy proxy?
No, I think we're in a good status here. There have been no further comments that I've seen. I haven't gone through all the mails from last night, but I don't think there's any. And there were no further wishes for comments, so I think the questions that we have at this point will allow us to move forward and will allow us to start our work.
Yeah, Lisa put in the chat that obviously one of your requirements is to make sure that you addressed that the policy, the outcome of the PDP, addressed the issues raised in the first recommendation. But that, I assume, is something you can do by simply looking at the PDP. We don't have to ask questions at the policy. We don't have to ask explicit questions to do that.
Right, but I mean, there's always a difference between the recommendation and the implementation thereof, and as we do not have that implementation stage yet, we may get an indication before we finish our work what the implementation will be. But, we will have to base it on part of the policy, that is the recommendation, not the effective policy that will go into effect once implementation work has completed. So that's handy. The way I have to deal with it at this stage.
Given that the budget doesn't allow us to have a time machine, I think we have no choice.
question for ICANN. Could we extend the budget for a time machine? I'd like one.
Well, I think the onus is on us to provide point to suppliers first. Dmitry, please go ahead.
Dmitry Belevsky for the record. Well, it seems to me that problem with private proxy services is very related with hardly understandable borders to data accuracy itself and to consumer trust. Just because all of this suffers from hiding data from public sources. Thank you.
That's indeed true, although nothing I think we can do about it. Any further comments? Lily, please go ahead. Lily, you're very, very hard to hear. I cannot make out what you're saying.
Is it getting better?
It's a little better. It's still hard, but we'll try.
In the data accuracy subgroup, I also found there are overlaps with the PNP service. The definition for the who is accuracy for proxy and privacy services is based on the service provider's contact information. So it's totally impossible to validate the real recipient contact information. I'm thinking how to deal with this issue on the data accuracy subgroup.
All right, thank you. I think I heard what Lily was saying, and I'll try to repeat it. She said that there are overlaps between privacy proxy and data accuracy, since it is not possible in a general case to verify that indeed they're doing it. The question is, are we meeting the requirements of the data accuracy? And my take on that is, that's a very real issue. I'm not sure we can do anything else other than report on it. And as Volker pointed out, that when information is revealed, at that point, then there is an opportunity to look at privacy proxy information and in the small samples that are revealed and say, were there accuracy problems? If something is revealed to law enforcement, that doesn't make it into the public. However, the UDRP does require that as one of the results of a UDRP, the pr- privacy, the information about the real registrant is revealed. It's an interesting aspect that, in fact, you can force a privacy proxy information to be revealed by filing a UDRP, and unless it's proven to be completely frivolous, then and maybe even that case, the UDRP rules require it to be revealed. So we do have a small sample of examples where UDRP information, privacy proxy who is information is revealed in a public sense. It's a very small sample, but other than that, you're right. I'm not sure there's anything we can do other than identify it as an ongoing problem. Lily, did I capture what you said accurately?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
I just love your point.
Thank you. Lisa, please go ahead.
Thanks, Lisa Pfeiffer, for the record. This actually is a good example of some place where, as you review what, in fact, was implemented in response to the first review team's recommendations, you could identify this potential gap, the inability to assess improvement in accuracy for records that are privacy proxy registered, and you could make a recommendation, for example, that some of that data be periodically audited for accuracy. I'm not suggesting that be the recommendation, but just trying to suggest how this process could work to identify gaps or potential gaps, and then suggest ways to try to remediate them.
Yeah. Thank you, Lisa. Yeah. Yes, I think that's what I was implying, that it could be something that we've identified as a gap. Not 100% clear that the policy allows us to even audit that information. But again, I'm not an expert on privacy proxy, so I may be wrong on that one. Anyone else with any further comments on privacy proxy? Then we'll go back to the common interface one and ask Volker, is there anything he can contribute on this, even though he is unprepared?
Not anything at this stage, I'm afraid. We have exchanged questions, but there has been little to none traffic on the mailing list, so I would very much say that we're basically at the same stage that we were at last week. We of course had the staff prepare the planning questions, which have been forwarded to the group, and there have been no comments on those, so I think we're good to go with those. Unless anybody else would like to add something at the last minute, there has been tumbleweeds on the list afterwards, so I assume everybody's good with them.
And we'll give people a moment to put their hand up if they want to raise any issues or write anything in the chat. And apparently there is nothing. The next item on our list is anything new. Stephanie is now on the call, I see. I don't know if she's prepared to speak about it. Stephanie, are you with us?
I am indeed. Stephanie Perrin, for the record. I'm afraid I was late getting my input in. So was Alan. I was in great company. It looks like we've got convergence among the three folks who completed the poll. That would be Alan and Susan, on which of the many WHOIS policies that would be qualified under the anything new that we think we should focus on. I would say that we certainly need additional ones, but we had agreed on our last call to focus on the top five. So I think we can move forward then, focusing on the top five, and start coming out with something by March 9th.
All right. Susan, do you have any thoughts on that? I will say that on the subgroup call, we had some disagreement about what are we required to do with the Anything New items, and there was some difference of opinion whether we must do an in-depth dive on each of them, or do we do a quick assessment and then do the ones where we believe there is something significant related to WHOIS that we need to further look at. We decided to take an in-between path of trying to identify the top most important ones without really commenting on the others at all. And we do have convergence pretty much on which five, or certainly five or six, to look at. But Susan, did you want to make any further comment?
No, I'm fine.
Okay. All right, we do have the matrix up there, and you can take a look at that. Essentially, we each identified which of the ones we thought were the most important ones, and I thought I had ticked off three, not two, but maybe I'm wrong. And it looks like in total we have about five, because there was pretty much convergence. Let's say one, two, three. Yeah, there was, well, almost convergence. We have, I guess, a total of six that are identified by somebody as requiring further work on it. And I guess the next step then would be for the group to try to do a somewhat more in-depth assessment of what are the WHOIS implications and to what extent do we need to put a full team on each of these. Clearly, we're in a position where we might be, you know, almost – you know, adding 50% to the overall workload of the group if we do this, and we have to consider whether we have the resources to do that. But I think the first step is to do a quick assessment and see where we are on that. Lisa said there was only two in my email. Okay, I'll look at it again. I thought I had ticked off three, but I may be dreaming. And anyone else want to comment on this, either Susan or Stephanie, now that we have that chart up, or do we just go back and do some work on our own? So, Stephanie, please go ahead.
There's one that I really, Stephanie Perrin for the record, hesitated about ticking, and you know it's my favorite, and that is the procedure for handling conflicts with privacy law. And I didn't tick it because I didn't see any support from my colleagues. I thought, well, let's try and work for the ones we do support. But I think it is important for this review team, given that we're about to lurch forward on yet another implementation review team on the WHOIS conflicts with law. And the GNSO has just approved that, I believe. I can't actually remember whether we voted it through. I think we did last meeting. But I don't see a near end in sight on the GDPR compliance. We are still going to have some kind of an exit strategy for contracted parties. It's probably going to be really ugly. And so... I think at some point we have to look at the procedure for the WHOIS conflict. I don't know how this is something new. It's the only policy we've got. So maybe if somebody can explain why this falls under something new, that might help. Thanks.
Thank you, Stephanie. I put myself in the queue. My understanding of this item, and maybe I'm mistaken, was it is the specific procedures that were put in place for registrars or registries to get exemptions due to privacy or other legal reasons. And my understanding is with the implementation of even an interim implementation of GDPR, we are going to be, to some extent, some of those reasons, some of those needs for exemptions will disappear altogether, because presumably we will believe that that our current procedures now address GDPR, But certainly those procedures are not likely to be the ones that are going to go forward. Part of the GDPR implementation is going to have to be to review those procedures for registries, registrars, anywhere, not only Europe, to get an exemption. And so I'm working on the assumption that those procedures are not going to be the ones going forward, and there's not a lot of merit in us reviewing those, which is why I didn't consider that one at all eligible for our review. I just thought, you know, we are almost surely going to have a different set of procedures going forward, regardless of what those procedures are, and that's why I didn't think they were relevant to this discussion. Lisa, please go ahead.
Thanks, Al. This is Lisa for the record. I was going to suggest that possibly one way your subgroup could move forward with your quick review of the top six was to divvy these six amongst the three of you and just try to identify the questions you'd want to address within the subgroup for those six. You may find that you have very few questions, in which case perhaps it's not important to dig into it in this pass, or you may find that you have a lot, and that would be the starting point for addressing whether you have additional resource needs.
Yeah, I will point out, at least my understanding of this subgroup is it was this subgroup was to do the triage, not necessarily to do any in-depth work that resulted from the triage, because again, that's specialized and might not be the right people for that. But I don't disagree. I think going forward, that's a reasonable way forward. Erica, please go ahead.
Thanks, Ellen. I want to come back to a point you just raised and the question whether an investigation is actually helpful because concerning the waiver, because in the future it might not be a relevant question anymore. I do have sounds there because I sent you some documents and I'm pretty sure you have seen them concerning the future, the question how law enforcement legal requests will be able to access data, critical data in the future. So this question is not going to fade away, quite to the opposite. It will become more relevant because if you can't see who is data, or you will be only able to see a certain amount of who is data, and all the other who is data will be based on particular requests, then of course it becomes interesting to know how these particular requests will be able to be sent forward. This is already a complicated issue, but just look forward to the future. And so far, I wonder whether the waiver might remain relevant and interesting in the future in a different way, but it might be still interesting to see did it work and what were the main complications in the past about it, just to understand is the procedure, how the waiver was established and how it worked, would this be a model maybe for future requests from law enforcement or from other legitimate entities to request information about who is.
Yeah. Erica, my understanding of that item is this is the one that will give a registrar or registry a waiver to not display information. I don't think it addresses at all how that information would be available to law enforcement should law enforcement want it. This, I thought, was just the procedure under which I can grant the waiver.
You're absolutely right, but my question was maybe not precise enough. But I wonder if the way I can grant the waiver and the way it evaluated the information it received based on why it could do the waiver would be indirectly give some indication how it could deal with law enforcement requests concerning who is data in the future. It might be not the case. It's just a question which I have. So I'm not saying it is the case. I'm just raising a question.
Yeah, I think your question falls completely under the work we already are committed to of does the current WHOIS policies meet the needs of law enforcement. So I think that's directly under it, because one of the current needs on today is what if law enforcement wants to get information that is now being hidden because of the waiver. So I think that's squarely under the law enforcement one today without any pushing at all. Stephanie?
I just wanted to, Stephanie Perrin, for the record, raise a couple of issues that I've noted in a preliminary review of the proposed model. And the first is that compliance with data protection law outside of the GDPR is optional. So I think that's a bit of a flaw right there, because WHOIS conflict with law is not solely for Europe. That's a bit of a problem. The model that we are about to embark on doesn't embrace other law. The second thing is the tiered access system has been tossed over to the GAC to develop. If this tiered access system comes up with what our constituency calls all-you-can-eat data once you get beyond the wall. In other words, if it is not targeted and limited, and if it continues to allow third-party data processors to scrape all the data and reprocess it and sell it, then it would be my argument that plenty of data of controllers, or not controllers, what do you call them, registrars, are going to have to seek an exemption under WHOIS, because the model will not be compliant with GDPR, and it will take a couple of years for that to sift through the courts, get the inevitable complaint, etc. So, I don't agree that it won't be necessary. I have no idea how we're going to reformulate this thing so that it actually works. I've said that a zillion times, but something will be necessary. Thanks.
And I think I agreed with you that there may well be a requirement for exemptions from policy law, even if it's not GDPR, although there may well be something in that case. But I don't think we're in a position to evaluate the GDPR implementation on the fly as it's going forward. I really don't think that is our job. Catherine, please.
Yes, thank you, Alan. I think you, it was in response to Erica's comments, and I think you made a couple of my points already. So, this is Catherine for the record, by the way, sorry. I think the one thing I still wanted to say was that the procedure, there was a question of whether this procedure of conflicts with privacy laws was in any way new. And I think Lisa already made the point in the chat that it is in fact new, because it has been recently revised, and I think there's only been one case since, which is the .Amsterdam case, which has asked for a waiver to respect the Dutch implementation of the current European Data Protection Directive 9546. So there's not too many cases, but there have been changes, and there's also, of course, sort of, if you want to call it case law, precedents that have developed at ICANN during the implementation of the policy. So I think it makes a lot of sense to look at it. And I fully agree with Erica on the need for possibly a different procedure to deal with waivers from what would then be actually waivers from privacy law as opposed to waivers for the benefit of privacy law. I mean, that might indeed be something that's possibly necessary in the future, but would probably be, I would argue, beyond the scope of this review team and even beyond the scope of the law enforcement needs. So again, I think this brings us back to the point of which point in time we take for our evaluation, which I think we're going to have to set and then stick to. So if we want to take the interim model into account or not here, and so far we've said that we really want to look at how things were before. So if we stick to that, then I think we should probably not include all those points in our review.
Thank you. Any further comments? I think at this point we're committed to look at the ones that we have identified, either the five top ones or the six ones, and work from there and see what comes out of that in terms of what we then recommend to the rest of the review team that we do in depth or not. I still see hands from Stephanie and Catherine. I think they're both old. And not hearing Stephanie's voice, I'll presume it is an old hand, or at least no longer appropriate, no longer valid. And the next item on our agenda, other than after anything new, is law enforcement needs. Thomas had that one. He has since given his apologies. Catherine, are you in a position to give us an update on that?
Well, I can try, although I have to say I missed the last phone call that we had as a group. So the outcome of that, as far as I understand, so I'm presuming that Thomas has given a previous update on this. We are also looking at a briefing request to the OCTO team, to so the security guys at ICANN, to determine whether there's any specific law enforcement issues and what the interaction has been between them and law enforcement. And in parallel, it was proposed to do sort of an informal outreach to the community to identify issues sort of on an individual basis. And I have since suggested that we might want to further prepare even for that informal outreach, because one issue that I see with the previous WHOIS team review was that for the law enforcement needs, there was little feedback actually from law enforcement. And so I want to use all opportunities that we have to get sort of standardized feedback that we can then compare and put into a digestible format so that we ask the same questions of everyone and get comparable answers. And that point is still, I haven't heard any feedback on that. And in parallel, I've seen on the list that we've been encouraged to further flesh out the briefing questions, in particular to the OCTO team, to be a bit more specific so that they an open to-do. So we've had a subgroup call. We've had two subgroup calls, actually, and we now stand at the stage of refining them into the requests for the briefing and determining how exactly we want to do this law enforcement outreach.
Thank you, Catherine. There was one other comment on the list, other than Lisa asking for fleshing out questions before we approach the OCTO team, and that was from Chris saying, essentially, if I can summarize, that whatever extent WHOIS meets law enforcement needs today, it is significant. It is going to be inevitably significantly lessened. The accessibility is going to be significantly lessened with the interim implementation of GDPR. And is there any real merit in doing a lot of in-depth study and questioning of law enforcement today when we know it's going to change? It's going to change for the negative, and maybe we're better off delaying till May to at least let them know what the world is like. They may not have experience in it, but at least they can try to assess at that point what the impact of GDPR is going to be on the law enforcement community. So that may be something we want to consider going forward. I see Erica has her hand up, though.
Yeah, Alan, thanks. I'd like to caution us a bit. This whole GDPR hype, it's when you look back when it was designed, it's many, many, many years ago. Law enforcement understanding at the time was still poor. So when you read the documents I have sent to you, and there are the latest requests from, and I'm talking about the European Union, but this is true globally, from governments who have to deal with information they have a hard time to receive. This is not just in relation to WHOIS, but this is in principle. And data which relate to either data which relate either to activities, perceived terrorist activities, or when you read the document, relate to intellectual property rights information, they can't receive neither as well. So there are different sources which are mentioned in these papers. And again, keep in mind, I'm not just talking about the European Union. So having said this, I'm pretty sure we will see very soon a change in how governments want to receive such kind of information. And I'm pretty sure who is will become again more relevant in the near future. They then will have to decide and will have to talk about it, how they want to find a way of dealing between these two conflicting legislations inside the European Union or in other countries as well. So between legitimate law enforcement needs and between data protection and privacy. I just would want to caution us not to give up the idea that whole data will remain relevant and important. Now, a lot of data will be hidden and will not be visible to the immediate public, but it will still remain relevant. So I just want to caution us to be a little bit more prudent here.
Yeah, thank you, Erica. I don't think anyone is disagreeing with that, but at the same time, I think this statement is correct, although I may be not understanding something, that even if law enforcement has the right to get something, and a process to follow to get it, that still means they have to follow that process. And potentially it is something that they can't get instantaneously, which they can get now. And therefore, there are, if nothing else, timing and perhaps logging and reporting requirements that will kick in. So it's likely to change, even if GDPR is adjusted to try to balance those conflicting issues within the European Union. And that's all I was saying. And until we know what the process is, we really don't have a handle on assessing how much law enforcement is going to be impacted or not. I see two hands, but I think they're both old now at this point, Catherine and Erica.
No.
Oh, then please, Catherine, then go ahead.
No, I mean, I think what Chris has raised is a point that we have discussed on the leadership call several times, namely, does it make sense to do this exercise now? And I fully agree that it is very challenging to make an assessment of the WHOIS as it was, given that it's going to radically change. I cannot agree more that what we're doing is sort of a historical review that will perhaps not be of very much relevance anymore. But that brings me back to the point I made before. You know, we need to pick and choose. We either say, okay, we see ourselves as assessing the interim module with all of its advantages and drawbacks in the hopes of informing the work of the policy development team. But that's a completely different task from the one that we originally set out to do, which I think we've previously agreed to stick to, which is to look at how it worked beforehand, and we can maybe still draw lessons from that. But that being said, of course, I mean, the way the interim model is shaping up, it's going to radically affect law enforcement. And just one point also on Erica's point, I think one of the major obstacles for law enforcement and any public authority will be to find the right legal basis to access not publicly available data, because that is no longer covered by existing rules such as the Budapest Convention and other national implementations thereof. We really need a new legal basis for law enforcement beyond any model that we adopt at ICANN level, for law enforcement even to be able to legally access the data from the EU. And that's going to be a significant challenge.
Thank you, Catherine. In terms of where do we stop doing the evaluation? I think with the change we did to the terms of reference, we have acknowledged that GDPR will be making some changes, and we will try to assess things by the time we have our final report, at least based on the interim GDPR implementation. We can't assess the policy that isn't written yet. But we did agree that we would factor in the interim GDPR implementation. So I think we have no choice but to do that. as you point out, the world may need international accords on some of this, and as Erica has pointed out, the European Union may have to make some changes to balance the various competing interests within Europe. But again, I don't think we can hypothesize what's going to come out of that a year from now. All we can do is work to what we have. And I think we already did acknowledge that we would factor in GDPR once we know where that is going. But that's as far as I think as we can go. I see Erica and Lisa, please. Erica?
Alan, I think I have understood you better now. I agree with you. As long as we evaluate the current status and the interim status sufficiently enough, I don't think so we need to go into in depth, but we need to understand what is working and what is not working in law enforcement, just to understand the threshold where it becomes so critical for law enforcement that either can't receive information sufficiently quickly, which they really need to receive. So I'm talking about the super critical information, sufficiently timely, or where the WHO's data is so poor that even if they receive the information, it is irrelevant because the information is just not relevant. So I think this would be good because this will be a question which will remain even in the future. Because even if everything would be hidden, then still the information they would receive upon request would still have to be accurate so that they then can actually continue working on it. Because otherwise, if there's no accuracy at all, then it's totally irrelevant.
I think I'm on the same page like you.
Yeah.
And I think we're already covering those under the combination of accuracy and law enforcement.
Yeah.
Lisa, please go ahead.
Thanks, Alan. Lisa, for the record. In listening to this, it occurred to me that some of the actions that have already been identified are really planning and preparatory actions, regardless of whether the needs to be assessed are law enforcement with WHOIS as it exists today or law enforcement with WHOIS as it may be modified through GDPR compliance. The briefing with Okto, for example, to learn about their interaction with law enforcement and potentially gather contacts there to conduct some kind of outreach that's broader. That could probably happen immediately without answering the question of which needs are you assessing. Structuring the questions that you want to ask during outreach, as Catherine has suggested, also could be done regardless of the timing of the outreach. So I guess I would encourage the subgroup to, move ahead with those preparatory steps as you think about whether you want to ask law enforcement whether their needs are met with the current system or with the potentially modified system. Thanks.
Thank you, Lisa. Any further comments on the law enforcement item? Catherine, please go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Alan. This is Catherine again. And just to say that we have already shared a list of questions, so I reviewed the ones from the 2012 WHOIS report and also shared the ones that I have previously asked of European law enforcement in the context of sort of our work on the WHOIS issue internally in the Commission. So those questions are under discussion, and indeed, if we can build on those before we do the outreach, then we would have more comparable input later on. But I think we're on a good path.
Stephanie.
Thanks. Stephanie Perrin for the record. I'm just wondering, what are the chances of getting actual hard data from law enforcement? And I would have thought that subsequent to the publication of the expert working group report, they might have engaged in some of this hard data collection and analysis. But precisely what do they need from WHOIS? What can they do using anonymized data? What what are the time gaps that are usually relevant? What is the ultimate purpose of the access to the data? Is it a prosecution? Is it scanning? Is it analytics? You know, what is it? Have we got data on how often they access the system and what for? Because if we have, I certainly haven't seen it. Maybe in the public safety working group. But until we know precisely what they need, we can't figure out how to respond to their needs. Because hitherto it's just been keep the who is wide open for us. And even if we were to do that on an interim basis, regardless of any conflicts with law, in other words, allow them to have access without a legal instrument inside the tiered access system, we still need that data so that we can come up with a final, more complete model. So that's a question in case you missed it. Thanks.
Thank you very much. It's interesting. At this point, they're already living in a world, law enforcement, where data is masked, because privacy proxy data is not available to them globally without any process. So what we're really doing going forward with privacy, with implementation of a GDPR type modified WHOIS practices, is we're simply changing the subset of data that is hidden versus the subset that is not hidden. And so I don't think the world is completely unknown. How it's going to affect them and how important it will be clearly is something we have yet to determine, and that will be partly based on just how much data is hidden and how much is not. But I don't think the overall environment is changed other than where the balance is. Stephanie, I think that's an old hand, and we have Catherine next.
Yes, thank you. This is Catherine. Thank
you. Sorry, Stephanie, were you speaking?
Just as a follow-up, it is an enduring question that I have, why we do not have more hysteria about the inaccessibility of the privacy proxy data among the cybercrime fighters. Now, the answer that I have heard is that they get access to the zone files, and that solves their problem. Is it possible that the law enforcement community is doing the same?
It's possible.
And if not, then why is there not more hysteria? Thanks.
I can't answer why there's not more hysteria. I can hypothesize that they're pragmatic people, and they know that we're not going to make privacy proxy services disappear. And they have to accept that. But it's interesting that from talking to people, even the fact that you are using a specific privacy proxy service is indicative of can be indicative of something. Catherine, please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. This is Catherine for the record. Just to say, also in response to Stephanie's very valid remarks about needing to know what data is used for which purposes, I think there is now some very good use cases that the Public Safety Working Group, with the help of law enforcement, put together for this not a task force exercise last summer that some of us participated in, to create a list of use cases. And there was also work done on the use cases in the context of the RDS PDP and indeed in the context of the first WHOIS review team, which includes what law enforcement uses for which types of investigations. Some of that is not publicly available because it says a lot about investigative techniques, but I think we have enough evidence to be able to make the case for certain purposes and to be able to assess the necessity and proportionality as relates to specific data elements. So I think that's a key one. And in terms of the privacy proxy, indeed, I mean, my impression has been from interacting with law enforcement that in many cases, they just take what they're given and they try to work with whatever they can access, and they're dismayed by the fact that they can frequently not access information that would be useful for investigations, and then those investigations just die a silent death. And that's how it goes, which, you know, I mean, in the balance of things, we're going to have to accept. So indeed, I agree with Alan that frequently law enforcement takes a quite pragmatic approach. That being said, you know, a lot of agencies are very actively involved in the work of the implementation team, as FOICA will be able to tell you, represented by one of the delegates from the Public Safety Working Group for the GAC, and there are some quite serious concerns about the workability of privacy proxy policies, in particular when it comes to cross-border access. So I think there, you know, indeed your normal law enforcement officer will often not even be able to tell the difference between the CCPLD policy and the GCLD, but there's the ones that are, you know, more into the subject do provide significant amounts of info to the Public Safety Working Group.
Thank you, Catherine. Any further comments? And seeing no action, we will go on to the next item on the agenda, and that is consumer trust. Erica.
Alan, so let me be brief. Two things. We had a call last week, and during the call, we had different topics which came up, which were considered for review. We built within the subgroup, we asked colleagues to review particular items, and I must, first of all, I must apologize that I couldn't deliver. I was on a boat and was supposed to have access in the evening to internet, but it just didn't work. I just came back today, this morning, actually late. So we received one comment from Dimitri, which is actually a very interesting one, and Alan replied to it. This was a debate we had last week, and it's an interesting debate because it goes beyond our subgroup. And this relates to the question, how we can actually define trust. And, that's an old question. When you review the old WHOIS data and in publications, it always comes back down to the question that how trustworthy can be defined for consumers. Now, Dimitri, and I want to put Dimitri his points to the I want to mention them today because they're interesting, because he came back to the conclusion he divided the consumers into different categories, which I think he's right. So common users, registrants, professionals, and law enforcement people. And then he looks into the different ways how trust is defined or how trust can be captured actually in different environments. I don't want to go into the details, just want to indicate you what we are working on. Alan then put this put forward actually and came back with some more radical questions related to, based on what Dimitri put forward, and probably his most Alan, your most radical point was to say when you consider that under various privacy legislation data will only become less available, how much time should we and future review team focus on the issue? Now, so I'm just giving you a quick overview where we are. We need to schedule a new call, and I think, Susan, we still have to send back some requests to the points which we identified as we would cover them. So this is where we are right now, Alan.
Thank you, Erica. I put my hand up because I wanted to very briefly present where I went with my statement. We know that the number of people who use WHOIS data to establish whether they trust someone or not is moderately small. You know, the number of users who will consult WHOIS data, the number of users who are not also registrants who consult WHOIS data, I suspect is very, very small. And to what extent that really gives people a level of confidence of who they're dealing with, which is what I think what consumer trust means in this case, is pretty small. I think we would have a hard case, we ICANN or registrars, that say we want to collect contact information and information about who the registrant is for the purposes of consumer trust. I think we'd have a hard time making that case before privacy commissioners. In which case it implies that consumer trust benefits from who is are ancillary. They're an accident of the implementation, and they may provide some good. But if they are that low-key, is it really a relevant topic to be discussed? And what I'm really saying is, were the words consumer trust tossed into the affirmation of commitments regarding who is as an interesting thought, but are we in a position, perhaps by the time we finish this study, to conclude that studies of consumer trust with regard to who is information are minimal at best and probably worth removing from the bylaws as something we shouldn't be looking at in the future, because it's just not the major reason, a significant reason why WHOIS is there. And I think that's an answer something we can't answer right now, but I think as we do the work on consumer trust, we should be looking at it with an eye to asking ourselves, do we want to continue and have the next review team also look at consumer trust, or was it an interesting idea whose time has passed? Thank you. And I see we have at least one hand up. Erica, please.
It's an interesting question you raised, Alan. I'm not so sure, because I think when we look back, we have to assume that WHOIS is still in early days. So let's imagine who would continue like it is right now, and there would be no change based because of privacy laws, and it would just continue. Probably it would become more relevant over time. First of all, because there would be more data, there would be more comparable data, and more players would use WHOIS than they use it now. But the second point I think I would want to make is that the second category I find the most interesting one Dimitri identified, actually the third one. And this is market professionals, so registries, resellers, lawyers, domainers. When you look into their debate about WHOIS, and they have separate channels where they debate this topic, it's actually a super relevant one for them. And they use it quite frequently. Now, I can't say how frequently they use it. One would have to talk to them and how relevant it is for them really. If it's just my assumption based on the big debate I see. But my understanding is it's super relevant for them. So I think your question is crucial, Alan, and we should keep it in mind, because if we will identify there is no need actually for the connection, or the connection between consumer trust and WHOIS is not relevant, then it will have serious implication. I still assume it is relevant, but this is only based on the few points I just made. Carlton, by the way, is making a comment in the chat room. I don't know if you've seen it. So he's saying, in relation to Dimitri's categorization, the only one I see that has a direct bearing on trust in WHOIS data is law enforcement and maybe the IP folks. Now, his last point in relation to IP folks, I think he's absolutely right. Law enforcement, we already debated, so I'm not going into detail, but IP people, they need this information. And so I would assume consumer trust remains probably a relevant topic. But we will take your point into consideration, definitely, Alan.
Yeah. Thank you. One of the things I think the group has to do, and we're not going to do it today, is decide whether, for instance, domainers and registrars are consumers. In the context of how this term was used originally, I suspect not. In any case, we do have several people with their hands up. We have 10 minutes left in the call, and we really do need to get on to looking at a few of the other things, specifically the face-to-face meeting and the plenary call. So unless someone has something absolutely compelling they have to say, I would ask people if they could put their hand down. But if there's anyone who has to say something, please keep it very short, because we do have to continue this past before the end of the call. Stephanie, please go ahead.
I consider it really compelling when you and I agree wholeheartedly on a point. I just wanted to say I fully endorse what you said about consumer trust. I think one of the problems under the GDPR is the ability for individuals to take a case, and consumer trust is not best satisfied by access to who is these days. We need much better security measures than who is can possibly provide. So I'd just like to put that on the record. Thanks.
Thank you very much. It's an interesting topic, and one that certainly I and other people will have a lot of fun with. Next item is the subgroup report template, and I assume that's Lisa.
Sure, Alan. This is Lisa Pfeiffer for the record. So we just wanted to note to you that on the subgroups page, you can find the template that was put out for reports from each of the subgroups. And the template, just briefly to tell you, includes, of course, an introduction of the topic, a summary of the relevant research materials. That includes, you know, what you're reading, briefings received, and inputs that you may receive during meetings. And then, of course, the big section of the subgroup report is your analysis of findings, so both reporting your findings and your analysis of those. There are then sections for identifying the problems or potential problems that you see that may be gaps in implementation of the first review team's recommendation implementation, or it may be other items for the other subgroups, but an identification of the problems that you see. And then, of course, formulation of any recommendations that you wish to put forward to the full review team. So as you begin your work here, aiming for our Brussels meeting, you may wish to start fleshing out some of these sections. For example, the summary of the relevant research, you could probably begin building from the materials you've already identified and have discussed how you'll either divvy up or all review that work. If you need any help in actually transcribing anything into the template to begin your document, staff is available to help you with that.
Thank you very much. Any further comments on that item? Seeing nothing, the next item is the plenary call schedule. I'll note that the schedule for calls between the ICANN meeting and our face-to-face, I believe we decided are fixed, and that we would have calls on the 23rd, the 2nd, and the 6th of April. And we are now looking at the schedule going forward for can we adjust it to try to hit better attendance. I'll point out today's attendance was pretty good. And I'll turn it over to, I presume, Jean-Baptiste or Alice. I don't know who.
I can take that. Thank you, Ellen. So, yeah, just a quick reminder that last week I've shared with all of you an email individually identifying your time zone and asking you to confirm your availability during a given week so that we can look at what would be a better time for all of you. The names are consisted on the slides. Just a reminder, if your name appears there, that you need to return to me the Excel sheet filled in with your availability. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I note you seem to be scheduling calls that are all scheduled in weekdays in pretty much all time zones. So it ends pretty early on Friday to accommodate those who are ahead of UTC. And I'll note in my case anyway, I have a lot of calls, and not all of them are fully under my control. And I'm not sure I know when all the calls are going to be over the next 6 months. And I suspect I'm not the only one with that situation. So all we can do at this point is do our best and hope that the the world doesn't change too much around us. But let's move forward, and this is the best we can do. And hopefully we'll come up with a schedule where we can try to get better attendance on a regular basis. And the next
Alan,
item,
if I,
yes, please go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to reply to a comment on the fact that all the different times were provided, and in fact this was a reply to a suggestion from Stephanie on the last plenary call about the fact that she could be taking calls much earlier during the day. So this is just like to have an overview of when everyone is available to see whether that could help or not.
Understood. And the next one is face-to-face meeting in face-to-face meeting before ICANN 62, and I would prefer to defer that discussion till a time when Chris is on the line, unless someone feels there's something, decision we have to make immediately. My recollection is we have until sometime in April to April or May to make a request. Is that correct? I'm guessing April.
And that's 90 days before that, I believe so. Yeah.
Okay. And lastly, we have confirmation of decisions reached and action items out of this meeting.
Thank you, Alan. So on decisions reached, so as I mentioned, there will be plenary calls on March 23rd and 2nd and 6th of April. And under action items, so for subgroups, the first one, privacy services subgroup, we have Susan to review the list of questions in light of Alan's comments on the email that he shared with the subgroup. On anything new subgroups, so the subgroup will assess which policy procedures will be addressed and which resources will be needed to do so. Consider the need to review the procedure for ending conflict and assess the need to review each of the identified items in depth. The law enforcement subgroup will finalize the briefing questions for OCTO and questions to be covered during informal outreach to law enforcement. Consumer trust subgroup will continue the call discussion about the definition of consumer trust within the subgroup. For all subgroups, the reporters will begin fleshing out the subgroup report templates that was presented by Lisa today. Deadline for subgroup report is 5th of April, and so this will need to be submitted at that date so that there is enough time to prepare for the Brussels face-to-face meeting on 16th, 17th, and 18th of April. And if you need any help on that, you can reach out to the ICANN support team. On ICANN 62 face-to-face meeting, so this has been reported to a next plenary call.
Thank you very much. I did not hear any other items on any other business. I had no requests, and I'll give people one last moment. We have the compliance subgroup meeting in 1 hour from now, and the strategic priority group meets at 12 UTC tomorrow, and I believe those are the only meetings we have scheduled prior to the ICANN meeting. And with that, I'll call this call to an end. And Lisa said data accuracy meets at 11 UTC on which day? Tuesday. Why is that not on my calendar? Not that I really want to meet then.
Excuse me, Alan, this is Brenda. The invite was just sent at the start of this meeting.
Oh, okay, fine. That would explain that. All right, thank you very much for participating in this call. I think it's been a really good call. Attendance has been great, and we'll look forward to seeing you all either in the subgroups, at the ICANN meeting if you are there, or on our next call after the ICANN meeting. Thank you all. Bye-bye.